Welcome to Nevada Newsmakers on the broadcast today. State Senator, podcaster, Ben Kiekhoefer joins us for the whole show on an all-new Nevada Newsmakers.
Safety. We all think about it. You think about it when he buckles in, when you check your mirrors and put away your phone. RTC thinks about safety too. In fact, we create it. Center turn lanes mean fewer blind spots. Bike lanes keep cyclists and you safe. Roundabouts reduce injury collisions, and all these crosswalks are designed to keep families like yours safe. Safety is your priority, and it's ours too. Every day, in everything we do.
Take a look at Pro Group Management and see how your workers' comp requirements can be met head-on. By taking a proactive approach, Pro Group can assure that your company is meeting or exceeding state and federal standards. As you move forward in your industry, Pro Group moves with you, simplifying regulatory tasks, clearing the way so you can get the job done, and look to your future success. Pro Group Management, workers' comp that works for you.
Early in the morning or throughout the night, professional truck drivers are on the job, serving you, safely moving freight that's crucial to our economy. From the oldest industries to our newest innovators, from the exotic to the everyday, trucks are everywhere, moving everything. Never afraid to embrace a future that makes Nevada and our nation stronger. Trucking moves America forward.
This is Nevada Newsmakers with host Sam Chan, a no-holds-barred political forum. Now, from the Nevada Newsmakers broadcast headquarters, here is Sam Chan.
And back on Nevada Newsmakers, we're always delighted to welcome back to the program State Senator Ben Kiekhoefer. A pleasure to have you here, sir.
Thanks for having me, Sam. It's a pleasure to be back.
I wanted to start out with a question that a lot of people may not know, is that you started out your career, at least publicly, as a reporter. Were you always at least a moderate conservative, even in your newspaper days?
You know, I grew up in Cook County, Illinois, right, just outside of Chicago, and I realized pretty quickly when I started voting that I kept voting for people who were losing, and in Cook County that meant Republicans for the most part. So I was always certainly to the right of center in my political beliefs. As a journalist, you know, you sort of keep your personal political beliefs pretty close to the vest. I always tried to uphold those sort of basic tenets of journalism. I think a lot of people were surprised when I filed for office as a Republican, having been a journalist and having worked in newsrooms. I don't think people always realized what my personal beliefs were, and hopefully that means I was doing my job well.
And absolutely agreed. And for all of us, we tried, you know, within newsrooms and even on this program, to try and confuse people as to where we stand personally. But when you look at newsrooms, as I did, newsrooms in news organizations tend to be full of young people who are not very rich. Mm-hmm. They make very little money. They tend to be envious of the sales department, who are driving around in Mercedes while the people in the newsroom are struggling to buy sandwiches. Does it surprise you then, because of that, that we seem to have so much liberal media?
You know, I think the studies that you've seen out of the Society of Professional Journalism and other groups have shown that, you know, the political bias of a newsroom tends to be more liberal. I think that's generally accepted. I do think, though, that most journalists are trying to do a good job and stay down the middle of the road. I believe in journalism. I believe in what J schools are teaching to kids. And I believe that people go into it with really good intentions. What I have found is, you know, when you think about political bias, right, or what they talk about for journalism and for news, isn't as overt, I think, as most people think about it. I think about it more now that I'm on this side, as sort of contextual and implicit rather than overt. And for an example, right, the Senate Republican Caucus has filed a lawsuit challenging a passage of a bill that we think required two-thirds that was passed on a simple majority last session. And so recently there was an article written, and it said, you know, that the Senate Republicans challenge a bill and could potentially blow a big hole in the state budget, which is A, false, and B, choice of contextualization that leans one way, right? It can make people think that there's some threat to public education funding or public safety funding or something like that that paints, I think, the Senate Republican caucus in a negative light. They could easily have contextualized the lawsuit as a defense of the vote of the people and the constitutional amendment that was approved by the voters. But they chose to contextualize it in one specific way, which also happened to be false. So I think how that sort of bias builds into news articles is what you see much more of than something explicit.
There's also a lack of institutional knowledge as we've expanded the number of news outlets, particularly in television, and even to the extent of a station that used to have perhaps a 5:30 and 6:30 and 11 o'clock news, mm-hmm. now has news starting at 4:30 in the morning. And I'm not talking just about local news in Nevada, I'm talking about local news across the country. You've stretched all these newsrooms so thin that in the old days where you would have several older people in the newsroom who had a lot of experience at the legislature, at the county commission, at the city hall, if you've got one of those, you're really lucky. And if they have time to mentor the young folk in the newsroom, that's great. But it's pretty rare. And I think that's why you see so much coverage of fire, police, in a way, the easy stories.
Yeah, the nuts and bolts of journalism. And I think what's happened is that as newsrooms have shrunk, right, due to budget cuts, there's been a heavier reliance on wire service copy and national feeders to fill those gaps in terms of the coverage that you're seeing in both newspapers and broadcast journalism. Unfortunately, wire services have also shrunk because dues are down from those organizations. So whereas, you know, there used to be, three people for the AP covering the Nevada legislature, which I was one of in 2003, churning out, you know, 3, 4, 5 stories a day sometimes that would just flood the wires that people could use and pick up, there's a lot less copy being generated. And with that, you know, shrinkage of actual content, there's a lot less context that gets available for people.
On the other hand, we have now expanded the ability for people like yourself or myself to be able to communicate directly with the public through things like podcasts. Mm-hmm. And you have started a podcast.
I have.
You're up to episode 3 at this point.
I think 3 or 4 is out. 3 is out.
I think you're up to 3, is at least the ones I've seen so far. Why did you just decide to do this? And it was interesting that one of your initial choices was the Attorney General, Aaron Ford, who is a Democrat.
Yeah, so, you know, the podcast is called Across the Aisle, and it is sort of designed to demonstrate, I think, to people that, you know, we get along a lot better than I think most people assume that we do across the aisle, from Democrats to Republicans, from legislator to lobbyist, maybe to staff. I want to have a fairly broad segment of people involved in this podcast. And we sit down and we have conversations over a cup of coffee or a lunch that are just pretty normal. And we talk about things that are important to us and our families and our personal lives. And a lot of the time, people don't see that and that type of dynamic and that type of relationship. So my hope was to sort of capture those types of conversations on a podcast, to share it to people, to give opportunity for my friends who I don't always work with hand in hand, maybe opposite each other, to have time to put their ideas out there in a way that shows that we can collaborate, that we can get along, and we can sometimes disagree amicably rather than with animosity.
And this used to be the way it was in Washington, D.C., until we had a situation where everybody had to come back to their districts every week, and so the ability to socialize in D.C. and therefore do what you're talking about publicly, but do it privately, is almost non-existent.
Well, it's absolutely true. You know, I think relationships are the foundations of good policymaking. And in Nevada, we still have an opportunity to build good relationships with people of different parties and different ideologies. And we have opportunities to do that sort of throughout the year, but also during the legislative session. We have lunch together every day in the state Senate, in our Senate caucus room, not Republican or Democrat, but the entire Senate can get together to eat, spend time together, learn about each other's families, likes, dislikes. And when you have that type of relationship, it makes it a lot easier to get along, even when you disagree.
What would you say is the biggest piece of legislation that has come out of those kind of relationships that people would be surprised to know that there was that kind of background to it?
I'd have a hard time maybe pulling one off the top of my head, but I always try to look for Democratic co-sponsors for, you know, my legislation. Perhaps the one that I can think of best would be the Silver State Opportunity Grant, which is was the first need-based college scholarship program, financial aid program that we created in the state of Nevada. This was the first program for community college students that provided financial aid for low-income students. I was the primary sponsor of that, but my co-sponsor was Senator Reuben Kulin out of Las Vegas, and he obviously moved on to Congress. But you know, during our work together in the legislature, we were able to, you know, work together on that piece of legislation and we had some different ideas about how things needed to be structured, but we were able to work together and compromise and finally get a great piece of legislation passed that is helping thousands of kids in Nevada go to community college.
All right, let's take a break. More with State Senator Ben Kiekhaefer after this timeout.
Tamarack Junction is South Reno's hotspot with over 450 of the latest slots and video games. Sully Sports Bar, the Dining Car Restaurant, William Hill Sportsbook, and the Tamarack Steakhouse and Lounge. We're just north of the Summit Mall in South Virginia.
Yeah.
Ahern Rentals began as Signal Gas Station on Las Vegas Boulevard. Founder John Ahern grew the business by offering rentals. His son Don built on John's legacy, growing Ahern Rentals into the largest independently owned American rental company with 89 locations in 30 states. Don also brought his experience and vision to equipment manufacturing with Extreme Manufacturing and Snorkel. Today, Ahern Rentals continues to bring its family values to a new generation. Learn more at ahern.com.
Hi, I'm Eric Robnett, owner of Home Energy Experts. Has this ever happened to you?
Honey, did you remember to turn down the thermostat?
Forgetting to set the temperature? Not fun. We can help. Our new smart thermostat keeps the temperature set for your comfort all by itself.
I'm feeling hot now.
To increase your comfort, go to homeenergyexperts.com for details. That's homeenergyexperts.com.
The signs and symptoms of cataracts can start out small with subtle changes in your vision. So don't wait. Be proactive and take your vision into your own hands. If you're experiencing the onset of cataracts or just have questions, contact your eye care professional or call Eye Care Associates of Nevada today. Dr. Hiss has years of experience specializing in the surgical correction of eye disorders and has completed over 84,000 vision-correcting procedures. At Eye Care Associates of Nevada, we'll change the way you look at the world.
The Tamarack Junction Steakhouse is known for signature steaks, handcrafted cocktails, and world-class wines. Join us Thursdays and Friday nights from 4:30 to 6:30 in the Steakhouse Lounge for live music, gourmet plates, and well-priced wines just north of the Summit Mall on South Virginia.
This is Nevada Newsmakers.
And back on Nevada Newsmakers, we continue our conversation with State Senator Ben Kiekhaefer. I have to ask you about President Trump. Mm-hmm. We had some folks on the program last week that were definitely not in the Trump camp. And I was curious as to where you sit.
You know, look, he's the President of the United States, and I will continue to support the President regardless of political, you know, sort of party. I said the same thing about Barack Obama when he was president. There are things that I agree with and disagree with, but, you know, I think it's important that we sort of stand together and try to, you know, support those things that that we can agree on, push back on those that we don't, and, you know, we'll move forward. There's an election coming up.
Which one? Give me a couple that you agree on.
You know, I think the economy is going really well. I support that.
To say the least.
You know, there are there's incredible wage growth going on from not only at upper echelons, but finally we're seeing significant wage growth from lower income groups. You know, unemployment is at a record low. Record economic expansion in this country. So I think that is something that we can all, you know, be happy about.
Do you think that there is the possibility in this election cycle, in this election cycle, where we've got so much fighting going on between the Democrats as they try to find their nominee, and the president having just gotten this huge war chest put together financially, mm-hmm. that Republicans might surprise Democrats in this election cycle by doing a lot better than the press may indicate at this point?
Well, I think anything's possible. We saw that, you know, 4 years ago, right?
Oh, when, for sure.
When everyone was expecting, you know, a second President Clinton. But ultimately, we're still a year out, or less than a year out from an election, and a lot is going to happen between now and then. But I think that Republicans are poised to do well, you know, and I think that the more we can focus in state races, for example, on the issues that are important to Nevadans, then we stand an even better chance. You know, we've got several competitive state senate races that we're focused on, primarily in Clark County, but along with one in the north. And I think we've got great candidates. We're going to speak to the issues that people care about in this state, and you know, we're going to put up a strong fight, and I think we're going to do pretty well.
When people talk to you, and people talk to you all the time, what are the three biggest issues that they are concerned about, and in what way would Republicans be able to help them?
You know, I think education is one of the, you know, the big issues that we're hearing about. Locally in northern Nevada, we continue to hear about growth and what that means. Right, and then I think people are continuing to worry that government is growing in a way that they're uncomfortable with as it relates to their lives in northern Nevada, and they're seeing some of those policies that worry them intruding into sort of Nevada government for the first time. So let's start with the first one, if you want. Let's talk a little bit about education.
Sure.
You know, we are making sort of dramatic changes in how we fund education in Nevada. But we've seen success in terms of some of the policies that we implemented over the past 8 to 10 years. You know, if you look at where we've decided to focus our resources in the past 8 to 10 years, it's been focusing on closing achievement gaps through things like Zoom schools, which target children who don't speak English well or are not fluent in English. Victory schools for children living in poverty, you know, putting more social emotional learning into the classroom social workers in every school. So these are the types of programs that have been focused on, and those achievement gaps are closing. We're not just inflating, you know, graduation rates, but we're seeing significant gains towards those students who have been underperforming. And it's because we've focused dollars there, and I think that's where we need to continue.
Okay, so just a quick question on this. Mm-hmm. You know, Ruben Murillo started this conversation of NSEA a couple of years ago, saying we still need $1 billion more invested into education. Mm-hmm. Do you agree with that and that number?
No, I don't agree with that number. But I do think that we need more resources invested in our schools, and I'll give you, you know, the reason why. There are 40 to 50 kids in some of these classrooms in these schools, and in my own kid's school, there are 40 kids in their Spanish class. You know, and I think that whereas class size is not the biggest issue in determining whether a student is successful, it's the quality of the teacher at the front of that classroom. There's a big difference between having 20 and 25 kids and having 25 kids and 40 kids. And we need to recognize that. And it costs a lot of money to hire the teachers that are necessary to reduce those class sizes. And I think it's important for, as we go into the next legislative session, if we're going to be investing more money in education, we need to start tackling this sort of crisis of class size. If you look at the average workload per teacher in schools, Nevada is dead last in terms of the number of students they teach across the country. And their pay is, you know, 15th or 16th highest in the country, but when you think about it in terms of workload, it's a terrible situation. So we need to start tackling class size immediately, and I think that's what you're going to get as a driving force out of Republicans next legislature.
Okay, so if you were to put a dollar figure on this, mm-hmm. That you feel is necessary going forward in the next session to put toward education, what would that number be?
Look, I think if we want to start having an honest conversation about tackling class size and allowing districts to do it strategically based on where their greatest areas of needs are, you could do that for several $100 million over the biennium.
All right, let's go to the next topic, which you brought up, which was growth, which is on my list as well. Mm-hmm. We are now at the point of seeing, both in the North and the South, a pushback against the growth. Mm-hmm. Does this, A, concern you, and B, what do you say to people who have concerns about the growth?
Look, I think that we need to take those concerns honestly, right? That it's not just a sort of NIMBYism or anything like that. That people have sort of certain expectations and a love of the community that they live in, right? There are people who have lived in this community for 30 years who have seen it grow tremendously. And they're struggling with some of the realities of the new size of northern Nevada. So what we need to, what I tell them is that, you know, that the good comes with the bad, right? And that sometimes the traffic that you deal with is a reality of ensuring that your children have a place to work in this community, right? And that's what I think about as we look at some of this growth. Do I want Northern Nevada to be a place where my children can find an excellent high-paying job when they are ready to enter the workforce, or are they going to have to go to another community to find that? And I want that to be here so that I can continue to have that close personal relationship with them and watch my grandchildren grow up, hopefully. Or are they going to have to do that in some other city like Austin or Boise or somewhere else? And I want them to be able to do it here. So the reality is that as people are moving out of high tax and high regulatory cities and states, they're looking for places to come and live that are more friendly. And the lifestyle that people have enjoyed in Northern Nevada for a long time is attractive to them. And there's a reason that it's attractive to them, and that's why they're coming here.
And in Southern Nevada, Tick Sagerblum was on the program a couple of weeks ago, and I was bringing up the possibility of the Ivanpah Airport, which would be the freight airport for Las Vegas, could be as much as 10 years down the road, according to Marilyn Kirkpatrick, the chairman of the Clark County Commission. And he was totally against that. He wants to see, as Dina Titus proposed years ago, a ring around the valley, mm-hmm. and building up instead of outward, and not having what he considers to be sprawl. Is that realistic?
Look, I think that it's a belt and suspenders approach, right? I think you need to be able to plan for lifestyles that anyone wants to have, right? And I do believe that building up is important, right? And urban density is something that will help alleviate traffic and help deal with social services that are needed within a more urban environment. But I think it's also incumbent upon municipal and county planners to provide opportunities for people to live in large lot residential or horse property if they want that. And I don't think there's anything wrong with both.
All right, let's take a break. More with Ben Kiekepa when we come back.
Dimitri Prine here for Design Outdoor. At Design Outdoor, we specialize in all hardscapes, pavers, and walls you'll need for everything, from wonderful small yards to full-blown outdoor living. And we only refer the best contractors to make your vision a reality. Our store and backyard are located at 11600 South Virginia, just north of DeMonte Ranch Parkway. Visit designoutdoor.com or call us at 851-9499.
I'm men's rights attorney Marilyn York, and because I represent men in all family law matters, women often call me gender traitor, woman hater, and even disgusting. So why represent men and target myself with these offensive monikers? It's simple. Children with fathers in their lives are 6 times less likely to drop out of school, 15 times less likely to go to prison, and 5 times less likely to commit suicide. So ladies, you can hate me, but please love your children more than you hate their fathers.
Hi, I'm Dave Newman. Remember me? I used to be the house detective, and now I'm a realtor, full-time at RE/MAX Realty Affiliates. A lot of people ask me, how's the market? You know what? It's fantastic. If you're even kicking around the idea of buying or selling, give me a call. Let's talk about it. Call me at RE/MAX Realty Affiliates and just ask for the guy who used to be the house detective, Dave Newman.
The signs and symptoms of cataracts can start out small with subtle changes in your vision. So don't wait. Be proactive and take your vision into your own hands. If you're experiencing the onset of cataracts or just have questions, contact your eye care professional or call Eye Care Associates of Nevada today. Dr. Hiss has years of experience specializing in the surgical correction of eye disorders and has completed over 84,000 vision-correcting procedures. At Eye Care Associates of Nevada, we'll change the way you look at the world.
This is Nevada Newsmakers.
And back on Nevada Newsmakers, we continue our conversation with State Senator Ben Kiekepa. Pat Mulroy was on the program about 3 weeks ago, and we were talking about water in Southern Nevada, Eastern Nevada, and then she hit on the Truckee Meadows and said that she is concerned that if we have an extended period of drought in Northern Nevada, that we could end up in a critical situation. Because we don't have water storage on the Truckee River, or an adequate amount of water storage on the Truckee River. Have you heard this discussion?
I guess that surprises me.
Due to the growth, of course.
Well, I mean, look, the top 6 feet of Lake Tahoe is storage for the Truckee River, as is Boca, as is Stampede. I believe that we've got a good buffer against prolonged drought for potable water in the Truckee Meadows. The biggest constraint that I'm worried about when it comes to water is actually discharge back into the Truckee River and what that means in terms of the restricting ability for continued growth in this community without an expansion of our Truckee Meadows Water Reclamation Facility and ensuring that we continue to protect the quality of the water that's going back into the Truckee River flowing downstream ultimately to the Pyramid Lake. Because that's, I think, what's going to be our constraining factor going forward. I don't currently have a large or significant concern about prolonged drought as a threat to our water supply. If there's data that indicates I should be, I'd like to see it.
But, of course, nobody would disagree with Pat Mulroy having concerns.
Well, she knows a lot about water. She knows more about water than I do. From my understanding, in terms of the storage capacity along the Truckee River, we have several years worth of reserve is, again, taking place in the top 6 feet of Lake Tahoe, plus Boca and Stampede and what's in the river.
Are you concerned about the direction that the Department of Natural Resources and Conservation is taking in terms of water at this point? The description of Eastern Nevada water, that if you're going to spend billions of dollars building a pipeline, you should look at other alternatives, and that caused consternation amongst many state officials.
Yeah, well, look, I think it's the idea of moving water from far eastern Nevada down into Las Vegas is one that has, riled a lot of people up for a long time. I understand the threat that people feel towards their lifestyle and what could potentially happen in terms of fears of drying up their valleys. And look, that's a legitimate fear. And I know that there's science to indicate it's not, but you're going to have a hard time convincing anybody of that. In terms of surprise of how the state is managing water resources, there are different issues in different parts of the state, and I'm never really surprised by anything at this point, but it's something that we certainly need to keep an eye on.
The podcast is called Across the Aisle. State Senator Ben Kieckheffer is the host, and thank you for being here as always, and we'll be listening to the podcast.
I appreciate it, Sam. Thanks.
And we'll be right back.
A bird's eye captures its surroundings at different heights. At Brian Culpa Photography, we can make your imagination soar over buildings, parks, cityscapes, and beyond. Brian's images tell the story and get the job done. If you need a new perspective to tell your story, contact Brian today. Brian Culpa Photography. Experience the bird's eye view at brianculpaphotography.com.
Hi, my name's Marilyn Miner, and I'm sure you'd agree that Nevada's a very special place to live. I was born here, and my husband and I have raised our family here. I feel it's a privilege to live and work in the Truckee Meadows. I especially enjoy helping my clients reach their real estate goals. Sometimes the smallest details provide the greatest satisfaction. I'd be complimented to talk to you about your next move.
Call Marilyn Miner at Dixon Realty, 742-1280, or log on to marilynminer.com.
Retail's impact on Nevada's economy? Enormous. 8,600 businesses, large and small, employing 145,000 workers. And last fiscal year, retail paid tax on nearly $60 billion in sales. We're the Retail Association of Nevada. We support retail. We help it grow. And we mean business.
RANNV.org.
Take a look at Pro Group Management and see how your workers' comp requirements can be met head-on. By taking a proactive approach, Pro Group can assure that your company is meeting or exceeding state and federal standards. As you move forward in your industry, Pro Group moves with you, simplifying regulatory tasks, clearing the way so you can get the job done, and look to your future success. Pro Group Management. Workers' comp that works for you.
You can now watch Nevada Newsmakers on YouTube. Just go to YouTube and search for Nevada Newsmakers and become a subscriber. We'll see you on the next broadcast. Thanks for watching and listening.